And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello. Today is Thursday, June 22nd. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. Listen to us any way you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook. Give us a listen. We're going to talk about a lot of sports. Guys, let's get it going. We're going to start it off by talking about the U.S. Open. Finished last week. Wyndham Clark is the winner with a minus 10 to net $3.6 million. His only other PGA Tour win was the week before at Wells Fargo. He's 29 years old. He's got a major. Kev, let's talk about the U.S. Open.
Boy, we were all over Wyndham Clark, weren't we?
Woo!
You know, it was amazing. You know, of course, none of us had ever seen LA Country Club. Very interesting course. I mean, there were a lot of holes. You know, the front nine played relatively easy. The back nine was just real tough. You had to score on the front nine to put up any number. The most interesting thing to me, was Fowler and Shoffley going out Thursday first round and putting up 62s to tie the major record, 8 under par, and you're thinking, the USGA's got to be thinking, oh God, here we go. This is the LA Open, not the US Open. We got to see 20 under, 30 under, who knows what. And they only gained two more strokes to par. The course just got more difficult every day. And I don't think the USGA, I know they've been accused in the past of really trying to trick up a course, trying to make it difficult. I think this course just, they let the rough roll a little bit, but this was a shot maker's course. And if you weren't precise, it was a challenging course to play. You could do what Rory did. You would think normally fairways and greens on Sunday, he hit almost every fairway. He was on every green and two. Couldn't sink a putt. One birdie, one bogey, 16 pars. To me, Rory's got to be so disappointed. He was right there, and he gave himself birdie chance after birdie chance, and he burned so many edges. That was his to win. And he just couldn't make a putt. And these were not putts that he was misreading, that he was way off fine. These were putts that were so close.
I was not a fan of this course, I have to tell you. One of my pet peeves with this course was 16, 17, and 18 were just so long that they limit the chance for a birdie so bad that when you get to the end of this tournament, once you pass 14, 15, you're not making any strokes up. There's no chance for it. I got the fact that they were trying to, do some different stuff with this course, but that 15th hole with that 81 yards, I mean, listen, I know what they're trying to do with it. I get it. But, honestly, I don't want to see these pros take out a gap wedge to hit an 81 yard shot. Like, I don't know. I didn't like it. It's me. I know it's me personally, but I wasn't a big fan of this course. So
I liked it being playing 81 yards on Saturday. I think I would have had more of a problem on Sunday if it was 81. That would have been a little too tricky for a Sunday. But for a Saturday, to give him that one hole that you just never see, 81 yards, and such a tiny green, area to shoot for, you have to be precise. I mean, it's just a little test there of just, can you hit something that precise?
A couple of points. I mean, again, you brought up the two 62s. Fleetwood shoots a 63 on Sunday, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying and he missed a putt that should have gave him the 62. I'm going to say something that's going to piss Kevin off here. I'm starting to think Rory's a little overrated. He never hits a big putt in a big spot. It's 9 years since he won a major.
It is, yeah.
I know how hard they're trying to root for him. I know that everybody that's a PGA fan, because of his vocal stance and because he's getting older now and you root for the guy that's been around, like I do. I do anyway. I can't speak for everybody. But at some point, you're going up against some kid that's won once and he's hitting putts and you're not. I know you weren't playing next to each other, And I think that might have intimidated the kid a little more because Fowler did not play well on Sunday.
No, Fowler had
a really rough day on Sunday. You know, a lot of guys had a rough day on Sunday, except for Fleetwood. Wyndham Clark was okay. He wasn't great on Sunday. He just hit putts. He made big shots when he had to. But at some point, it's got to be, you know, Rory, you won those majors really early, and you haven't done crap since. I mean, at some point, he's got to win a tournament. And I know you can sit there and say he burned the edges. Everybody burned the edges. There was so many missed close putts by everyone. It wasn't just Rory that was missing close. Everybody was. Gee, I have no problem with people taking out a gap wedge on the 15th on any day. I mean, Kev, you might not like it on Sunday. I don't really care. I just think it's kind of fun watching him try to read the slope. I thought Azinger was awful. There was one play, one hole with Wyndham Clark where he's like, oh, that ball has no chance to trickle down. Then it trickled down.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, I must have misread the slope. I mean, Azinger had a few weird ones. That one was awful, I thought. I just was like, what is he watching? And I don't know if you guys saw the controversy the day after, where they're saying that the ball on I forget what hole it was, where Wyndham Clark moved something and the ball might have oscillated a little bit and he should have been assessed a penalty. I did not. I mean, it was and I saw the replay. It took me about 15 times to see a ball slightly move. I mean, I think it's like getting a bit extreme. Remember, I forget who it was, where people were calling from their couch at the U.S. Open that somebody committed a penalty. That was a few years back.
Yeah, they
stopped that. They won't allow that anymore. But there were people complaining. I think there were. You know, I'm like, listen, it had no effect on the shot or the ball. So I thought that was really weird. Course got harder as the week went on. The first day was a little easier than everything else. But the only charm to this course to me was length. It really didn't have anything that you sat there and looked at it and you were like, there was something beautiful about it, or something fun about it, or something exciting. It was just length. Length and sand traps. That's why I didn't like it either as much as Gino did or Gino didn't like it either. I mean, the two of us felt the same way. I just didn't find it to be like a course where you're like, wow, this is something fun. That was just me.
Kev? You like playing in Lionel Richie's backyard?
Listen, I like seeing Lionel Richie's backyard. That was about it.
How many more times are we going to hear that is Lionel Richie's backyard? I mean, listen.
Between that and the monkeys at the Playboy Mansion Zoo.
Exactly.
I mean, because the thing is talking about L.A. and trying to explain the city nothing to anybody because it's a major city. It's like, you know, when you do something, you want to talk about what's going on in the city of Augusta, you know, it's, you know, for a couple of times, it's interesting for a little bit at first, because none of us know what Augusta is, you know, but you, LA, everybody has, so you're in a wealthy area that used to be really restricted and racist up till about 20 years ago. Congratulations. Now everybody can play. Overall though, I mean, tournament was exciting. It was a good leaderboard, right? And anytime you have Rory on the leaderboard, you have Fowler on the leaderboard, you have Shoffley on the leaderboard, you had a bunch of guys that could play. Dustin Johnson hung around for a while. Koepka never made a run, by the way. I was surprised. He never really got anything better than one under, I don't think, during the whole tournament. You know, Justin Thomas, what was he, 15 over? Didn't make the cut.
JT was 14 awful. Over.
Yep. He's go back to the drawing board. He's like what Fowler was 2 years ago. He's got to go back to the drawing board and figure out what happened. But again, it's the U.S. Open. I love the golf at night. I'll take a West Coast golf anytime I can because I love the fact that I could get home, not miss any of the action during the day, chill out and watch from 7 to 10, and I'm a happy guy.
I can't agree more on that, by the way. That was going to be one of my points. The other thing is, can we please get rid of the drone noise, please? The noise of those drones is absolutely insane, okay? But – you know, going back to Rory for a sec. So Rory's 34. He's got four majors. Realistically, what are we giving him? Two more? Maybe?
I mean, he'll eventually win another one or two. He has to, I think.
He hasn't won one in so long.
Yeah, it's been 9 years, yeah.
I mean, you know, when he – so he had four and he was what, 26, 25, whatever the hell he was? So he's now gone 9 years with nothing. I don't know. I mean, I think when he was winning them all, we all thought, oh, maybe he can get this, you know, 9 or 10 maybe. But, you know, he's stuck at four. I don't know how many more he's going to win. I don't know if he's going to win any more. You know, I'd like to think he's probably going to win one or two more. But, you know, realistically – I think after that, it's just a damn crapshoot, Darren.
To be honest, you'd love to see him win one an Open. You'd love to see him win one over in Great Britain. I just think it would be very fitting for him to at least have another one out there because that's where he's from, and it just kind of like his style of play. It just seems like, you know, he had every opportunity to win, like you said, Kevin. He was hitting fairway. He was hitting better off the tee than any other player all weekend, in my opinion. I didn't see anybody even close to him off the tee all weekend.
I would agree with that.
Every fairway long, and then giving himself the irons in, and like giving himself good birdie chances.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
he wasn't trying to hit 60 footers for birdie.
I mean, the interesting thing that was funny is Fowler set the record in this tournament with most birdies. Yeah, 23. Yep. Only problem, he has what 16 or 17 bogeys to go along with it. But he was hitting birdies. Rory couldn't hit any.
His Friday round was it? He shot 2 under. He had 4 pars.
Yeah,
six bogeys, 8 birdies. I mean, just all over the place.
It was good to see him back, though. He's a very popular player. I think people like watching Ricky and root for him a little bit.
Yep.
Obviously, he didn't put a good Sunday performance. It was the first time we've seen him competitive in years now, so that was kind of cool to see. Overall, fun tournament, though, I thought.
And like you said, you know, looking at the leaderboard, you know, yeah, we don't know Wyndham Clark, but, you know, another young guy, you know, you can root for him. You know, he lost his mom not too long ago, so you feel, you know, so you got that part with him. You've got Rory, you've got Ricky, Scheffler was there. He just got nothing going. He's another guy that shot even par 70, just got nothing going.
And the one thing that was cool was his eagle on 17 on Saturday.
Yeah.
That was freaking awesome.
That was incredible.
That was an amazing shot because he doesn't show a lot of emotion. And he like jumped into his caddy. It was really cool to see because nobody's scoring. Nobody's even getting birdies. He's shooting an eagle on that hole.
The 2-3 finish there on Saturday.
Was freaking awesome, man. That was.
You know, Kevin, you had said at some point on Saturday to us in a text, you know, look at the leaderboard. You got great names on the leaderboard. And you were right. You know, the problem I had is when we got to Sunday, I didn't feel like anyone other than the top four had a chance of really winning that tournament.
The guys who shot real well, you mentioned Fleetwood, Cam Smith shot well, Minwoo Lee shot well to get up. They all finished. I mean, it was a couple way tie for, they were tied for fifth finishes.
Yep. Yep.
But they started too far back.
Absolutely.
Nobody else who was in the top five or six going in shot a number.
You needed a Dustin Johnson at -4 or -5 going in that day that could go make a run to 8 or 9, and we didn't get that. We got guys that were -1, even +1 that really made the run. Nobody that was -3, -4. Not that there were a lot of them, by the way. Started off on Thursday where so many people were under par. By Saturday, that number had dwindled down to, what was it, 9, 10. It really wasn't a big number at that point.
Yeah, 37 shot in the 60s on Thursday.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I mean, we're 5 or 6 holes into Sunday, into that round. And, you know, to me, I was like, okay, I don't know if anybody other than the top four have a shot at this. You know,
I would say after the seventh hole, you know, Ricky bogeyed 2, 5, and 7.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just tell that took all the starch out of him. He had nothing. He was not coming back. So that took him out. It was really Clark. It was McIlroy, and maybe you're waiting for Scheffler to do something. He never did. Scheffler is another one who had a bad weekend. Shot 73, 72. You know, like I said, nobody else wanted to go up there and grab it.
Yeah.
The funny thing about Ricky was there was a few shots in that front nine where he thought he hit him right, and he was short, and he was disappointed, and he was mentally out of it at that point because he thought he hit him, and he didn't. And the thing you look at when you saw Wyndham Clark is he's a guy that can sustain this for a little bit. He's got a good he burst onto the scene. He's been in how many leagues trying to get himself to this point. Doesn't have a swing coach. They went through all that stuff. But he's got the build, and he's got a little bit of cockiness and swagger where you think that this kid could be around a little bit. He could be one of those guys that's competing to make Ryder Cups and stuff. I mean, obviously this year will be a – you know, he'll be able to qualify for whatever cup they're going on as an American because of just this win. But he's a guy that's going to be in contention for a while, in my opinion. I think he's good. I like what I saw.
Okay. Any other notes on golf before we move on?
Rory had his first hole in one today in a PGA event here at the Travelers. I think on the 8th. It was good for Rory. He didn't have a putt, so this way he didn't miss the birdie.
That's right.
No, he ended up easiest
way not to putt, not to miss a hole.
He shot pretty well today. McCarthy leads, I think, a minus 10, but he was easy in contention.
McCarthy shot 60, and he was inches short on the one putt. He was less than a foot away from shooting 59.
It's pretty impressive. Actually, very impressive. Anyway, that's about all I have for golf, Jake.
Okay. Let's move on. Let's talk a little baseball. Sure. Kev, you want to start with the Mets, or do we want to start with the Yankees to start?
Mets are an absolute shit show, for lack of a better word. When they hit, they don't pitch. When they pitch, they don't hit. This team just looks so dead. There's no life in them. It's just they're becoming hard, very hard to watch.
They're not
even fun to root for.
They're now 7 games out of a wild card, 14 games behind the Braves in the division.
Yeah.
It's getting to a bad point as we near the end of June here.
Yeah, their best starter's been Senga. Scherzer has been up and down. Verlander's been up and down. They've got nobody else beyond that.
Haven't seen Quintana.
Haven't seen Quintana yet. Carrasco's been bad. And the two guys who, you know, I think Mets fans, you know, again, being their farm, you know, come up through the system, you know, you're rooting for Peterson, McGill to at least be decent 5 starters. And neither one, I mean, Peterson, shockingly, I thought just imploded this year. You know, I thought he, you know, first few years, you know, he reminded me a little bit of a Steven Matz type. You know, he can give you that good game. A lot of the times he's going to give you, you know, 5 1/3, 3 runs. You know, you're hoping he does enough to keep you in the game. But definitely not top of the rotation, but not as bad as he was. Tyler McGill, geez, at this point, he can't go deep. I'd almost send him back to AAA, convert him to reliever, let him focus on 1 or 2 pitches and just see if he can get anything, savage anything, because he's not a starter. Plain and simple.
Kev, I'm sorry, but the Mets don't have a Tyler McGill problem. I mean,
I know that. I know I'm picking on him, but.
It's a good point. It's a good point, Jay.
He's just a poster child for, you know, everything that's just bad right now.
I mean, you sit there and you look at some of the Mets stats, right? You sit there and look at a guy Lindor and he's 50 ribbies and all this stuff, and it looks great, and he's hitting 214. Yep. And you say, wow, that's 20 points higher than Volpe, who Gino wants to send down. I'm joking, Gino.
we'll come to that in a little while, but
set myself up. But that's fine. Now, I mean, listen, the thing is, you're rooting for the kids right now. Alonso's back, so there's something exciting about that.
Yeah.
Excuse me, though. The big problem with this team is that Verlander and Scherzer have to be stoppers. Scherzer had a good start this week against the Astros. Verlander did not really match it in his start. These two guys have to be really good. They don't have to be great in early June, but they got to be really good. They got to start being great in July, August, and September. But you're not seeing signs of that. Even Scherzer's dominant performances aren't as dominant as you would like to see. Too many pitches, not deep enough into the game. You want to see Scherzer even at the advanced stage, and Verlander going into the 7th. They can't be 6-inning pitches, these guys. They just can't be.
Yeah, I mean,
especially with no Diaz.
Like I said, the other night, you know, the 8 innings from Scherzer, that looked like Scherzer.
It was nice. It was the first time you'd seen it pretty much all year.
Yeah.
And it's good to see.
And then, like you said, offensively, you know, you take a look. Nimmo's the one guy that's hitting his career averages.
He's playing well.
Maybe the strikeouts are a little higher than you would like if you wanted to pick him. But other than that, you know, Lindor, yeah, he's driving in runs, but his average is bad. Pete's got the home runs and the RBIs, another guy with a bad average. Marte, I don't know what happened to him this year. McNeil has become a slap-hitting 275 hitter this year after winning the title last year.
He's also making a lot of outs in big spots. He's not looking good in runners in scoring position, which is what's upsetting about McNeil to me.
Yep. And then, you know, when Tommy Pham is your hot hitter, when you're starting to hit the beat,
always has been streaky as hell.
Yep. you know, just
let's say Steve Cohen decides he's going to add two more players to this roster in July. What positions do you want, Kev?
I want a big bat. I don't care what that outfield DH type.
Okay.
I think you need a big bat there. And if Quintana can come back and pitch well and solidify that fourth spot, you know, you can work with the fifth guy. You need bullpen help.
So you need
a dominant guy in the bullpen because Robertson's been great. But you can't rely on him all year pitching this well. Raley's been good. You know, Ottavino, I know you don't like him. He's taking a step back from how well he pitched last year. Drew Smith is, and the rest of the bullpen. God, if I need to see, I mean, we keep picking up these guys from the DFA. Leon is the latest one that just get rid of him. He sucks. Why do we pick up guys from the DFA?
Ottavino's a right-handed John Franco. Just don't swing. Yeah. He'll walk you. The pitch will sweep out of the zone, and he'll walk you.
I asked you the question. I basically tried to set it up that way because I don't think it really matters who you add at this point. What it's going to come down to is this core group needs to play better. If you're not going to get it from Scherzer and Verlander, and you're not going to get it from Lindor and Marte and McNeil, it's not going to matter who you add at this point.
Yep.
Right. You may need another player in here to jumpstart everybody, and maybe it happens. Maybe you're adding a bullpen arm. Maybe you're adding another starter. Maybe you're bringing in an outfield bat. I get it, but at the end of the day, if the veterans on this club don't pick it up, it's not going to matter what you do.
Yeah. You know. To me, the bat's got to replace the fam kind of Vogelbach level player. That's where you're making your improvement.
But Kev, don't you think if guys like Marte and Lindor and McNeil are hitting, that maybe it's not the fam Vogelbach thing is not that big of a problem? You know, it's being really emphasized now because the other guys aren't hitting at all either. So, you know. But anyway. Darren. Let's talk some Yankees after the 10-0 start to the game.
It's 10-2 because Falefa hit a home. Here's the problem with the Yankees, right? And nobody can hit. When Judge is in the lineup, this team is almost impossible to watch. McKinney's hitting over 300, but it's such a small sample size you can't count it, right?
It's Billy McKinney.
The on this team is 265 with Rizzo going into tonight. Then you had a couple guys like Bader and Torres hitting in the 250s. And then you have, I mean, I know you like to pick on Volpe. Josh Donaldson's hitting 133.
Okay.
He's hitting 133. Now, Peraza's in the minors playing second and third in outfield because they're trying to find a place to put him. Stanton hitting 196.
I've been beating around the bush with this with you for weeks now. So let's get it out of the way now, okay? So here is what I want, okay? I want Cashman to send Volpe down to work on his swing. Listen, just before you shake your head. I don't care. For 5 weeks, okay? Here it is. You're going to bring Peraza up here to play shortstop, and you're going to give Donaldson the ultimatum. You got 5 weeks to hit, or I'm cutting you. I'm waving you the same way I waved Hicks, okay? Because Volpe is coming back up here in 5 weeks, okay? And then you're going to play Volpe at short and Peraza at third or vice versa. But there it is, okay? I'm getting it out of the way early. I want Peraza up here. He's hitting 292. He's got 11 home runs and 144 at-bats. I need to see him up here. And I want Volpe back. I don't want him down there all season, but he's got to work on his swing a little bit and stop all this uppercut swing because I can't have him hitting 193 in 249 at bats. That's not what I want from my rookie. Other great players have gone down in year one, come back up and destroyed the ball. And I'm hoping, and I'm going to bet on that all he needs is 100 at bats in the minors right now to correct the swing that we've seen in the minors, but not seen here.
I have no desire to send them down. I have Stanton hitting 196. I mean, you know, I have a bunch of guys that are hitting 230 and below. I'm going to pick on this one kid.
I'm not picking on them.
They have Peraza playing second and third. They have Peraza playing second, third, and outfield down there because you know what? Volpe's the shortstop on this team. So why bring Peraza up to play short just to move him later? Why bother? It's a waste of time. Put him in third.
Volpe needs to work on his swing.
Well, here's the thing. Last week, apparently Volpe at an Olive Garden with a friend figured out what was wrong with his swing a little bit. He actually made an adjustment. Now, here's the whole thing. Who are the Yankees paying to be watching this kid swings if he's watching something with an old high school teammate and picking up a freaking glitch in his swing? You know, that's really more my problem. I don't see the need to give Donaldson another at bat. He's hitting 133. Why give him five more weeks so we can fall out of the freaking race? What are you trying to do here? Donaldson does not get a clutch hit. Volpe still occasionally does.
Donaldson is making too much money, and you're going to have to keep him here for a little bit. You're going to have to leave him here. Darren, this whole team is not hitting. You can't cut everybody.
You want to cut the kids.
No, I don't want to cut him. See, you're wrong, and that's why I don't like when you make it out that way. I don't want him. If the rest of this team was hitting, and we said we want him to go down to work on his swing for 4 weeks, you'd be okay with it. But because everybody else is a disaster, also you don't have a problem with this.
Actually, no, that's not what I would say at all. I don't want him to go down even if they're all hitting or they're all not hitting. I don't care.
Darren, he struck out 84 times at 249 at bats. Can we give the kid 4 weeks in the minors to work on his swing and come back up?
Your timetable thing is ridiculous. How do you pick 4 or 5 weeks? It is absurd.
Near the trade deadline.
You see what's going to happen. You don't just pick random. You've got 5 weeks. Why would you pick 5 weeks?
Because the four weeks is because it's near the trade deadline. That's why.
So what's going to happen near the trade deadline? People are going to be all over us about Donaldson? Or no. Go out there and spend money to try to try to see what we can do to upgrade?
No, listen, you're missing it. That's not where I'm going.
My point is simple. If Peraza is playing third in the minors, watching his stats, he's playing third in the minors. Let him play third in the majors. Why move him back to shortstop now if they're just going to move him to third anyway?
Because
if you don't want Volpe to play, fine.
Because Volpe needs a little time in the minors to correct his swing. That's why.
Listen, here's the problem.
If Volpe was hitting 280, I have no problem bringing him up and cutting Donaldson right now. I have no problem with that. But he's not hitting 280. He's a disaster in a nine spot.
He's not a disaster with 10 homers. You have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. Obviously, not watching the games. But here's the thing.
84 strikeouts to 249 at bats, hitting 193 is not a disaster. Then what is?
What is it? He's got 10 homers. He's driving in runs. He's stealing bases. He's doing things that are helping the team win games. I'm sorry. He's fine on this team. Oh, who is? What, Bowers?
Darren, it's not 31 average. It's not the comparison. It's not he is or who he or somebody else is.
I'm just going to make one point that you seem to keep missing when I say it. If Peraza's playing third now, let him play third up here. If you want to not play Volpe, then put kind of a left or a shortstop and send him down. But you don't make this move and move him back to short only to move him back to third. What are you thinking?
Because
you can't do that. It's a wasted move.
You can't cut Donaldson.
Yes, you can.
You can't cut him now. You can cut him
in a second and a half, G. I don't hold on to any player hitting 133.
Well,
no player while hitting 133 has any right to stay. Going into tonight, I don't know if he went off tonight, but they didn't score any runs. So I'm assuming
he's down for 133. I agree, but he's making too much money.
So what does that mean?
It's the Yankees. It's the Mets. Mets are in the same boat now.
Listen,
money's no object.
I am fine with what you're saying, if that's what you want to do. But Volpe still needs Volpe to go down to work on his swing. Well, he's not working on it up here.
He's not working on it up here?
No, he's not. He's hitting 193. He struck out 84 times at 249. He's had 250 at bats now, Darren. It's not 80 at bats.
So he goes down to the minors and he struggles. Then what happens? Now you've taken his confidence completely. I'm just saying. He's your number one prospect, and you've taken his confidence completely because
you
don't
have confidence right now. 194. Do you think he has confidence right now at the plate, hitting 193?
He just won a game the other night. I don't know what you're watching. He won a game the other night. He had a homer and a big hit in the ninth. He did. You could say what you want.
I know he did.
The embarrassing, they can't beat Boston.
He had one hit, but he didn't have 80 hits because he had 93.
He actually had two hits that night if you were watching. One was a homer, actually. But the thing is that, you know, I get your point, G. I get your point that he's struggling. I just don't see the real purpose. When the rest of the team is struggling the same exact way, we're going to single this kid out and say he's going to work on his swing. I don't buy it. I'd let him stay. I know I'm probably in the minority on this. I think that more people will agree with you than me on this. I don't see any reason to bring Peraza up to play short. If he's playing third in the minors and second in the minors, let him play second and third in the majors. Why move him to shortstop? Why create a controversy? Or who do you like better, Peraza or Volpe? Keep them separated. This way everybody knows their role and they're coming through. Unless you like Peraza's glove better than Volpe's, then move him to short and have Volpe work at third. I don't really give a damn. What I want to do is say that this team, without judging the lineup, can't hit. And the fact that you're sitting there picking on Volpe and not on Stanton and Donaldson blows my mind. Blows my mind that's where your head is at. That the biggest thing that you have right now is Volpe over Stanton and Donaldson? You got to be kidding me.
Because I like the kid. Because I like the kid, and I want him to play well here. And I think he just needs a little time in the minors to refine his swing again. Because what he's doing here is not what he did in the minors.
No doubt. But he wasn't in the minors that long as a young kid.
Okay.
But listen, you knew he was going to take an adjustment to hit major league pitching. It does.
That's what I want. I know I'm not correct in Donaldson. And Stanton is going to be whatever the hell he's going to be. This is Stanton. He's streaking.
By the way, you're the same guy that said, don't go after Soler. How many homers does he have now? I'm not trusting your baseball opinion all year.
Hey, listen. I don't care.
Kevin chuckled at that one. Come on.
I just want.
That was pretty good.
Because I'm tired of seeing all these bad outfielders here, Darren.
We could have had Soler. You didn't want him.
I did want him. Who the hell? Who said I didn't want him?
Weren't you the one that said that he's got like no homers, or was it Kevin that said that? I don't remember. It was Kevin. No wonder you were quietly your meat over there with that one. I thought it was you, G. My mistake. I apologize.
I'm the one that wanted Soler for the Mets. I told Kev.
I said I would take him for the Yankees too.
That's what you said.
I'd take him for the heartbeat. You know that was hitting the crap out of the ball, as is Arias. Listen, I understand your point. I get it. I just don't see the benefit when the whole team is struggling. I get your point, though. I can't completely disagree because he isn't hitting 200. I mean, here's the question, Jay. If he was hitting 224, would you feel the same way?
Yeah.
Okay. That's really the question.
Yeah. I think the kid is good. But I think right now the kid is a little lost at the plate. And I think he needs to just correct this. Listen, Gino went down. Mantha went down. Everybody... All these superstars went down for a period of time and came back up and hit the crap out of the ball. And I like what I've seen so far. I like the speed. I really do. But at the same time, you know, put him down there for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Let him correct something and come back up. That's it. That's all I'm asking at this point. I didn't ask that up till this episode. This is the first episode I'm actually saying it.
You've been hinting at this for like
a minute.
What's the other side?
Because I think he's good. I just think he just needs a little refining right now to correct whatever the hell he's doing wrong that he didn't show in the minors. He didn't show this in the minors.
He didn't show it in spring training either.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So, you know. All right. So any other Yankee points before we move on? Because there's a lot of good stuff going on in this one.
Well, here's the thing. With the Yankees, the whole thing is, and like we said, without Judge, you know, it's ridiculous. Can't get swept by the Red Sox and lose 5 out of 6 to the Red Sox. They're not very good. There's so many problems with this team. Herman suddenly can't pitch. Severino's been awful his last 3 times out. This has become a – if it wasn't for Gerrit Cole, there's nothing to watch on the rotation either. This is really just – this is a $200 million. I mean, I make fun of Kev's $300 million payroll. At least this guy's to watch. You watch the Yankees, it would judge out of the lineup. You have Gerrit Cole and nothing else. If you like Rizzo's 265, woo, that's it. That's the next highest batting average outside of McKinney. And, I mean, that's how bad this team is.
And you expect 265 from Rizzo with, you know, home runs.
It's actually fine.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't expect 196 out of Stanton, and you don't expect 133 out of Donaldson, and you don't expect 252 out of Torres, but you're DHing him because he's a must-have bat in your lineup.
And then LeMahieu at 220.
Gito favorite, obviously. And
given all that, though, at least Yankees are still in wild card position.
Miraculously, they are. They took two out of three from Seattle to stay in it. But it's, you know, there's a lot of things. I mean, Brito threw a gem last night. You know, I mean, that's what you're getting. You can't get anything out of Herman or Severino. Just tough stuff.
At least I don't have to see Willie Calhoun for a little while because he got injured. So.
You know what? I actually liked his bat in this lineup. Next to everybody else, I like Bowers and Mike Calhoun more than most of the other guys.
Bowers, Bader, and McKinney.
So, Gino, who do you want to see the Yankees get at the deadline?
So, I think the Yankee problem goes a little deeper because I don't think a position player is going to help them, so to speak, because if everyone's healthy, there's really no place to play anybody. You know, for me, I think they need another starter. I thought Rodon was going to be that guy, but we haven't seen him yet. I mean, you know, hey, listen,
he's making progress. So let's see.
Man, it's the Quintana factor.
It's the Quintana. Yeah, it is.
You know,
listen, it's not even in the same ballpark. Rodon was expected to be a horse. Quintana was expected to be a fourth or fifth. There's a big difference. Big difference. The loss of Quintana is not nearly what the loss of Rodon is.
If you ask me, it's probably a closer. It's probably a starter. And it's probably some corner outfielder in that order. You know, I don't know. I mean, you know.
On paper, the Yankee lineup outside of catcher should be solid.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't know what makes them much better at this point because, you know, if everybody's healthy, the lineup's the lineup, you know. It's Rizzo, it's Torres, it's Volpe, it's Donaldson right now. You know,
gotta be Peraza. I do agree with you on that.
The outfield, you know, it if Judge is healthy, it's Judge, it's Bader, it's Stanton. You got one other spot. You know, I really don't know what else you add that winds up helping this team long term. I think a closer helps, you know, and I kind of like that the Pirates have lost a little bit. Maybe it opens up the fact that they will try to get rid of Bednar, and a starter. I mean, that's where I would go. So some other good news going around baseball though. You got some teams on some win streaks right now.
Yeah,
you got the Reds. You got the Giants.
The Reds are the funnest team in baseball right now.
Because
of the kid, they are just must watch television right now.
Oh, Dela Cruz has been awesome.
Dela Cruz is the whole youth of that team is exciting, but Dela Cruz is just beyond.
Dela Cruz especially. You've got Steer, you've got McClain. You know, you still have guys like India and Fraley who are not old. You know, they're still there.
Well, he was Rookie of the Year last year. He's certainly not old.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the Stevenson's a young catcher. I mean, they're young. Votto's the only veteran now. He just came back.
But they need pitching. They put it together for this little stretch here, but you know, when you're going out there, you know, Hunter Green's your best starter, and he's gonna be out for a couple of weeks now. And he's the best starter. He's at 3.93 ERA. You've got Graham Ashcraft with a 6.78 ERA. You've got Luke Weaver with a 6.47 ERA. The bullpen's been great for them.
The problem with the Reds is they didn't expect to be competitive this year.
No.
So they didn't go up. This is like 2 years ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
And it's showing. You know, it's really showing because they don't have the pitchers. They don't have the horses, like you said.
And they still got Encarnacion Strand in the minors.
Yeah.
He hasn't even come up yet. I mean, and he's got a power bat like crazy, they're saying.
I mean, they've been lucky in the division too. Milwaukee's just been sort of treading water. Look, your Cubbies have gotten hot. They've won 8 of the last 10 to get back towards 500. Pittsburgh, after their start, they've lost 9 in a row now. And the Cardinals have got to be third most disappointing team in baseball right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. The funny thing about the Pirates is that you didn't think they were going to make any kind of run, especially when Cruz got hurt, you know, before the season started. When they lost O'Neill Cruz, and he's that other guy.
And
that is almost like the De La Cruz type thing where he's kind of a must-watch kind of guy. You saw the lasers he was hitting last year, hitting the ball out of the yard faster than anybody else. A 6'7" shortstop. He was the first one to come up like that. And you're like, whoa, holy cow. And when he got hurt, you thought the Pirates had no chance and you can get Bednar in May. And then all of a sudden they came out pretty good.
Yeah,
and now that division's still wide open for everybody. The Cardinals can still win this division.
They're only nine back. Despite how bad they've been, they're only nine back.
That's the sad part. They can still win the stupid division. They're the most talented division.
Yeah.
Maybe the Cubs, but that's it. I mean, those are the two teams.
You got some other teams that are just playing really well still.
The Giants have been great. They lost today, but they won 10 in a row.
Yeah, a couple of guys who have helped them. J.D. Davis has been real solid for them. Glad we traded him, plus all the other guys for Darren Ruff. That was a great trade, Billy Epler.
Listen, Duvall's been lights out of the pen. The starters have been pretty good all around. They do it different than Cincinnati. They've got a lot of, like, veterans that are, like, Yastrzemski, guys that have been around a little bit that have been really chipping in. While the Reds are doing with all youth, it's a very different way they're doing it.
Even Conforto's chipped in a little bit. You know, he's got 12 home runs.
You know, Devontae Wade is on a lot. He's on base percentage well over 400, I think.
Yep.
He's been really good. I mean, getting off and scoring runs.
And like you said, they've got an ace in Logan Webb. They've got a solid two this year with Alex Cobb. So they've got some of the pitching depth.
He got shelled today.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Well, the Padres finally won one of the games they should have won in the series. They won 10-0 today. The Gary Sanchez effect still with another three-run homer.
But with Duvall out there, with both Rodgers out there, you know, they've got a bullpen too.
Duvall's been great after the first week of the season. He's been outstanding.
Yep.
No, the Giants have been excellent. I mean, they're really fun. And like you said, the Cubs are playing well. Listen, the Braves just continue to play well, which is scary, I know.
Arizona.
Arizona's been great.
I mean, Corbin Carroll. I mean, obviously, I mean, with all the hype that he came up with, and he's delivering. Near 300, 16 home runs, 40 RBIs, 22 steals, 956 on base.
If it wasn't for a guy named Acuna, you could maybe say he may be an MVP candidate.
Well, listen, when Acuna's a track record of health, you can't take him out because Acuna can go down at any point.
Yep.
I'm not saying he's going to. It's bad for baseball, but it's good for the Mets fan.
But they're getting the contributions. Walker, Marte, Gurriel, for example, in that lineup have been solid. They've gotten pitching from Zach Allen, Merrill Kelly, doing with the bullpen by committee with Chafin and I'm going to butcher the guy's name.
McGough.
And another former Met, Miguel Castro, pitching in out there too.
They're another team that could probably use a starter.
Yeah. But at least with them, they're looking for an innings middle of the rotation guy, not a top end.
Agreed.
Arizona, I mean, because the Dodgers have struggled as well. Arizona is a legit team to win that division right now. Padres have really struggled. The Giants have become the competition.
Yeah.
They swept the Dodgers. They took 3 out of 4 from the Padres. I mean, you can't ask so much more than the Giants this last week.
But you look at the Dodgers. I mean, they're so top heavy. I mean, to me, you've got Freeman's putting up a great year. Mookie's been okay.
That's fine.
J.D. Martinez, Will Smith have been real good so far. But you've got a couple of guys who are home run or nothing hitters. It feels like Vargas, Outman, Muncy. I mean.
Well, Muncy's been that way forever.
He's been that way forever. But the other two guys, too, I mean, they're all averages 200 or maybe a little above. They'll hit home runs, but nothing else.
Muncy's a little bit better than that
averages
group,
of the Yankees.
Muncy's a lot better than that group of guys, though. I mean, Muncy, if he's on, can hit you 30 home runs. I don't think those other guys are hitting 30 home runs.
He'll hit you 30.
And Muncy's always going to walk. Muncy's always going to get on. So his on base is always going to be. His average will never be there, but his on base will be good.
He's that three true outcome guy that they talk about. Walk, strike out, or home run. And I hate that type of player. I can't stand watching that type of player.
Me too.
But again, with them. Kirk Kershaw has had a huge bounce back year, but
he's been great.
You know, again, the rest of the rotations, you know, Gosselin has been good until today and the rest of the rotation, they've been hurt.
Yeah. I mean, in the AL West, Texas is just still playing really well.
Just one more thing. In the National League, Arias, 397.
Yep.
I mean, the kid, he had a 5-hit day the other day to go back up to 400. He went 1-for-3 tonight, so dropped his average.
Dropped his average, yeah.
He's higher than, I think you can add 2 Yankees up and they won't get there. That 397.
I heard he was only the 4th player to have 5 hits, to go 5-for-5 3 times in the month.
Yeah.
And the other 3 players were Ty Cobb, George Sisler, and Dave Winfield. So that's a pretty lofty group, let me tell you.
The funny thing is Winfield's the guy that seems like he doesn't belong, and he's an Hall of Famer.
One of these things is not like the others.
I know.
But what's interesting, you know, Miami's right there in the thick of the wild card. And if you told them before the season, they'd be right there with Alcantara with a 2-6 record with a 5.08 ERA. I don't think Miami would have believed you.
Yeah.
I buy into this stat more than most, but the Heat, the Panthers, the Marlins, the Dolphins. I'm afraid of the Miami Dolphins, and I'm afraid of the Marlins. I'm just saying, sometimes cities have years. It happened to Philadelphia. I'm just saying, it happens. It's usually not all 4. Usually it's 3.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, you know, you remember Jets. We don't remember, but we read about
Mets,
it.
Mets
and Knicks, you know. So there you go. I can't speak much to the Rangers that year. I think they were decent, but I think they lost in the playoffs to Boston.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And in the AL, you got the Rangers playing really well.
Outstanding.
To play well. I mean,
let me make a point that will make Gino happy, I think, with some of our off-season discussions here. Corey Seager's putting together a monster year so far. He's been hurt a bit, so he's only played 43 games. He's got 10 home runs, 45 RBIs, 358, over 1,000 OPS. And there's an interesting discussion about him. Up until 2017, his batting average on balls in play, BABIP, was over 350. 5 years after that, he was down to 290. By last year, they were shifting on him 93% of his at-bats. All of a sudden, this year, they outlaw the shift. Yeah, small sample size, only 45 games, but his BABIP is now back up to 390.
The fact that you're talking about that stat is killing me. Anyway.
I mean, things just goes to show you that he's probably the guy who's benefited, you know, who's the poster child for the guy who says, to back up Gino's point, there should be no shift. You know, let the batters, you know, be able to open where, you know, And to me, I'm the type of who would say, well, if he's hitting 390, but you know where he's hitting the ball, let the fielders play where they should to get them out.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the Yankees haven't learned how to beat the shift or the lack of a shift because nobody's hitting over 265. But anyway.
Neither of the Mets, don't worry.
Now, Seager's been outstanding. Eovaldi, not great his last 2 starts, but it's been amazing up there. A lot of good things to like with this Texas team. Semien's been great. There's a lot to like on this team.
Low, Young, Garcia,
like third league and ribbies. I mean, there's a lot.
The third baseman, Josh Young, has just been ridiculous.
Young's been hitting. Even Helm behind the plate's been hitting a little bit. I mean, everybody's shipping in.
Everybody's hitting up and down that lineup. But to me, the surprise, you know, with the sub-3 ERAs, you know, Eovaldi, Gray, and it looks like Dunning's the guy who's taking DeGrom's place, and he's up to 3 ERA so far in about 8 starts.
Yeah,
so far, they've been able to withstand the loss of DeGrom.
I mean, two
words, one name, Bruce Bochy.
Garcia's putting together another good season. Jonah Heim behind the plate's playing well. I mean, it's a good team right now.
The Orioles, too, by the way. I mean, we all know about what the Rays bring, but the Orioles have been excellent.
Oh, Hutchinson's been a big help for them.
Listen, he's a little banged up, but, you know. But, yeah. No, I'm sorry. Gunner's banged up. Rushman's fine. My bad.
Well, their big acquisition, you know, hitting 321 for them in 18 games is Aaron Hicks.
Yeah. The thing about them has been the pitching has been better than expected. You thought they would hit, and you thought there'd be a lot of 8-7, 9-8 games in Baltimore. But they have what, 2 or 3 starters with sub-3 ERAs. I mean, they're pitching real well.
Yeah.
That's the difference on this team. Baltimore's been great.
Yeah, they have been. They really are. The whole group of those young kids, they're all playing well now. All right. Any other baseball?
No, I'm just excited to see Baltimore and Cincinnati, two cities that have had some tradition in baseball that haven't been good for a while. It's good to see them playing well again.
Well, I think the only other point was, you know, the Angels still there in the wild card race, you know, means they're not trading Ohtani.
Him and his 24 homers.
24 home runs, 58 ribbies, 10 steals, another guy near 1,000 OPS. Never mind his 3 ERA, 1.0 whip. I mean, guys, just incredible.
Everybody's sitting there with a wide open, everybody's ready for the checkbook to come out to see where he wants to play next year.
Yep.
I'm hoping that the Angels make the playoffs, not to the Yankees' detriment, but I'd like to see that team, you know, have an opportunity.
Yep. Who do you think are the favorites to land Ohtani in the offseason?
I think the Dodgers are the favorites.
Sounds like Dodgers.
I mean, I think the Yankees have a shot, but I think the Dodgers are the leader, the Yankees and the Mets 2-3.
Yeah,
and either or, you can mix them up. You can mix them up. I think it's going to be one of those three teams, but I think the Dodgers get them.
I think it's Dodgers or Padres on the West Coast, and I think it's either the Yankees or Mets on the East Coast. I think
the Padres, I mean, how much can they really spend? I mean, at some point, it's got to be Uncle.
Well, maybe not.
I get it. It just seems weird.
So, all right, let's move on. We're going to talk a little NBA. NBA draft is going on as we speak. Wembanyama was the first pick taken tonight. We've had some trades. Who wants to start this off? Kev, you want to start this off?
When I was doing the reading the mock drafts and everything else, it's so hard to know these guys because half of them play in the G League or this other league, you know, for 16 to 20 year old elite league, you know, whatever. I don't know half of these players at this point.
I used to know the entire draft inside out, Kev.
Yeah.
And, you know, the last time I saw the Thompson twins, it was the early 80s.
That's right.
Now that picks 4 and 5. But it's not about productivity anymore. I mean, Wembanyama, you know, obviously he's 7'4". He's got the skills of a guard, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But you know somebody that height, how long they stay healthy. Remember, Ralph Sampson was a generational player until he wasn't. So yeah. I'm not trying to say it, but you sit there and you watch now. And it's really just all about, well, he's got great length and he's got this and he's got upside and he can shoot and he's a supreme athlete and a perfect build. I mean, it's not about your production in college anymore. It used to be all about that. And you'd know everybody that was coming through. Now the first senior in the draft probably won't get drafted until the second round. Hawkins ended up going in the first, but he was a junior. But I mean, but at the because of the COVID year. But nonetheless, I mean, but you won't see seniors go and because, they're too old at 22. We want the kid at 18, 19. I couldn't tell you anything about Scoot Henderson. I haven't seen him play. Couldn't tell you anything about the Thompson twins. I saw highlights of Wembanyama. He looks bigger than everybody else. It's going to be interesting to see.
Brandon Williams. That's who we see. That's who we saw.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, Hood Schifino at Indiana. You see a couple of these guys coming through. Whitmore dropped from Villanova. The kid from Hawkins from Connecticut got drafted. I think about 15 or so.
14th, yep.
Yeah.
Just behind Grady Dick.
Yeah, who we saw also.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's all about trying to find 3-and-D guys and guys that have athletic builds. But you sit there and watch. The NBA draft is much more of a miss than a hit lately. You have so many guys that get drafted high that just don't make it. And it used to never be that way. But the league is all about drafting 19-year-olds, and you don't know their maturity. And you don't know how they're going to do against the competition. They didn't have – I mean, even if you're playing in the Ignite League, what are you playing in front of 500 people? You don't have 18,000 people sitting there yelling while you're trying to shoot a foul shot down the stretch of a game or when you shoot an air ball and they're all over you. You don't have that. We don't even know what these guys are going to do under pressure. That's just my take.
No, I agree. A
couple of trades, though.
Guys we may have heard of.
Yeah, I mean, Bradley Beal goes to Phoenix. Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, bunch of second-round picks and first-round swaps and all that kind of crap. And then Chris Paul doesn't play for Washington. He gets dealt over to Golden State now. So, and I thought Jordan Poole, the guy with the more upside. So I was surprised that they also had to throw in draft picks. I just don't know. I just don't understand some of the trades.
It's the contract.
I get it, but at the same time, draft. It's not like you're taking money off the books. You're just trading draft picks.
But what gets me is the top 20 protected 2030 first round pick.
It's like prediction.
How are we at the 2030 already? It was just 1K.
It's only 7 years away, and you can only trade every other year in the NBA. Even though things are going to get a little bit more dicey, I think, with the new cap rules. But yeah, Chris Paul going for Jordan Poole. To be honest, I kind of don't mind what Washington's doing. Then they dealt Porzingis, who goes to your team. He goes to the Celts. And Marcus Smart, the guy that wants to take the big shot, is no longer there. Now we're going to see. We're going to see how Brown does.
My son was devastated losing.
Well, here's the thing. The thing about it is everybody talks about Brown's defense. The thing and Tatum and stuff like that. Where Brown falls in good shape with both of those guys is, Tatum's going to take the big shot, and Smart's going to guard the best offensive player. He didn't have to do either.
Yeah,
Smart was the best defensive player, and Tatum was the best offensive player. So he got to be number two in both roles. It's an interesting thing, and it sounds like I'm picking on Brown. I like Brown. I'm not trying to pick on him. I just hate his turnovers, big games. But it's like now you're going to see, because he's going to have to guard the number one on a regular basis. They're going to put, and we're going to see how good a defensive player he is. He might be great. It's going to be interesting to see.
I don't like the thought, if I'm a Celtics fan, of paying him, $275 million for 5 years.
No, I don't either. But Boston did what they had to do, though, because you're playing way too much Al Horford. And Porzingis, if he's healthy, gives you a big that you can actually rely on in some way or another. Al Horford is way too old to be that guy you're banking on now.
Like I said, on paper, Kevin agrees that it upgraded the team, bringing Porzingis for Smart, but he hates giving up Smart because he's that glue guy. He's that guy you root for. He's on the team.
He's a dog. He guards everybody. He just takes too many of the last shots.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was there any other trade that missed? I know Paul George is on the block, but I don't think anything happened, right?
Not that I've seen yet.
No,
a couple of trades in the draft, but that's hard to tell to me.
They don't announce them till the end and stuff like that. But we'll see what happens. But so the Suns are going for it. Yeah. Beal to this group. You have a shot of having four max players on this team, basically. It's pretty crazy.
Yep. Well, going into next season, Durant, Booker, Ayton, and Beal are just a hair under 170. That's a contract for next year. And that's without anybody else on the rest of the team. So
now, I mean, I don't consider Ayton a max player, but I mean, he does get a lot of money.
Yep.
Okay. So we'll see what happens there. One basketball though, guys, one basketball.
All right. Any other basketball points?
Not for me.
Nope. Okay. Only other thing I got is any comments about Tiki Barber taking over for Craig Carton on WFAN?
I don't think Tiki's a very interesting listen. I don't think Craig Carton. I didn't like Craig Carton. I thought he got a little bit of a benefit because he knew a lot of people of getting a job. So he got out of federal prison. Thought they made it a little easy for him, in my opinion. But whatever. I don't listen as much as I once did, so it's not as big a deal. This is the Mike and the Mad Dog slot for anyone that made it famous, and no one's ever going to really replace what those two guys did for terrestrial radio for Drive Home. During the heyday of sports radio talk.
I'm willing to give it a little bit of a listen. I really didn't like the Craig Carton and Evan Roberts show. I really never listened to them on any kind of consistent basis. I'm willing to give Tiki a shot with him. We'll see what happens. Kev, any thoughts on it?
I never listen to the radio anymore. So I haven't listened to the fan in, probably since Mike and the Dog, probably.
Wow. Okay.
And nothing personal. I mean, I work from home. I'm not in the car. I'm not commuting. So
it's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple points for me real quick. The CONCACAF Nations League, the U.S., wins for the second time in a row. Really interesting way it worked out. Chris Richards scored his first ever goal off a corner from Claudio Reyna. It was nice to see Reyna taking the corner and not always Pulisic, because I didn't think he was that accurate last time we watched. And then following Balogun, the new striker, had his first goal ever. So they won 2-0. They were playing without Dest, playing without McKennie, who both were out because of cards for the final. And,
That Mexican game in the semis was just
Just dirty. But it's
dirty by Mexico.
It's dirty.
Yeah,
that Mexico's always dirty.
Once Mexico falls behind, they play dirty.
No, they always have. I mean, that's just the way it is. They beat Mexico in the semis. Beat Canada, who had been, you know, one of those teams. You know, Reyna, again, you got to remember, is only 20 years old, I think. So he's a young kid. He's not quite 21 yet. He has four goal contributions in his first two tournament final appearances, surpassing Clint Dempsey, who held the record for the U.S. Matt Turner had another clean sheet, his 19th, in his 20th overall game. So it's always nice to see that. And Pulisic was named the CONCACAF Nations League best player. And Matt Turner took best goaltender. So I thought that was cool. I always like it when the U.S. gets the win. You got to love the way the soccer works, because the sport is enough trouble gaining traction here in the United States, and they put it on a streaming network. I mean, come on. Air the freaking game.
Yeah.
Don't put it on a streaming network. It's hard enough. You got to go digging around and trying to find it on Paramount Plus or whatever the hell it was. It's like, enough. Make it so people can watch it. I mean, it's like, unless you're a soccer junkie, you're not looking for that game. I happened to catch it.
If it,
I was watching the U.S. Open more, but I had it on in the background just trying to catch a little bit of it.
I mean,
I wasn't really paying attention enough.
Even if it's on FS1, you know, at least it's on. It's one of the ones that's at least close to you. Oh,
FS2. Oh. Who cares? FS2, I could find it.
Yeah.
You know, easier than the streaming network. Just two other quick points. TCU. Well, tonight, LSU knocked off Wake Forest 2-0 in the 11th. Pitchers duel through 10 innings. They went to the pen, Wake, in the 7th. A couple guys pitched really well, but then brought in their fourth pitcher tonight. He gave up a 2-run homer. LSU will now play Florida in the finals. Wake Forest and TCU become the team that finished third and fourth, basically, or tied for third, whatever you want to call it. They don't play. You know who the manager of TCU is? Kirk Sarlous.
Yes.
Very interesting that you see Kirk Sarlous' name come up. But the year TCU has had, they made it to the Final Four of the College World Series, made it to the final of the college of football playoff, and they made the tournament, lost in the second round. It's one of the best mid-majors Kev has ever seen.
That's right.
This team has been dynamic all over the place.
I just thought it was really interesting. They play in the Mountain West, don't they?
They used to play in the Mountain West, yes. They actually were an original, Kev, Southwest Conference team.
I know.
Where there was more bribery in that conference, I think, than the SEC back in the day. I mean, SMU getting the death penalty. I forget, somebody made the comment once, and I thought it was the funniest line. He goes, "We're all buying players down here, but some of these schools can't even finish higher than 7th or 8th with all the money that they're spending. At least we're winning." I think it was somebody from SMU said it. And I think it was like shots at TCU and Texas Tech and all the teams toward the bottom. I mean, I don't think Rice was buying anybody, but everybody else was at the time. Because Rice is the only one that's never made it back to a major kind of conference. But I just thought it was a good year for TCU's athletics overall, especially on the men's side. Any of you guys have any other comments before we wrap up?
No.
No? All right. Well, and Venus Williams won a match against a top 50 player for the first time in like forever. Lost again tonight, but I'm just saying, with her age, she continues to play. Her sister is retired. She's older, but she played. We are the sports. Yeah, I'm sorry, Kev, go ahead.
Just mentioned women's sports real quick. U.S. women's soccer team was announced. Megan Rapinoe's still on it. Can you root for Team USA with her on it?
I will not root for Team USA, and I know it's awful to say that. I will not. I mean, I don't think that they respect the flag. I don't know why they want to represent a country that they don't care for.
Yep.
I mean, when they drop the flag is what upset me. Listen, yep. I don't care about anybody's individual beliefs. We're all entitled to them. But if you're going to play for the flag, play for the flag. Otherwise, don't. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen the Bill Burr skit talking about the comedian, talking about women's women's athletics and how they cry about not getting equal pay. And he's basically like, why they always blame men for? How come the women aren't going out and watching these games? The reason why they don't get equal pay is because the crowd doesn't fill it up. It's actually a funny skit because of the amount of money that's produced. But the women's team has been a traditional powerhouse for years. Didn't win last time out. I'm sure that they're trying to fix those little problems and get things going. But I hate the fact that it's become political. I'd much rather just root for the team and the girls
team
and let them play soccer or football, as Gino would call it, because of his UEFA knowledge. Anyway, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren. I'm here with Gino and Kevin arguing about the world of sports tonight with me and G for a little while about the Volpe scenario. We hope you enjoy the show. Please download the podcast anywhere you can get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, TuneIn, Spotify, however you'd like. Also, you know, follow us on Facebook. I haven't been posting much in the last week. I'll get that back on that. But, you know, let us know what you like, what you don't like, and what else we should be talking about. And we'll be getting more and more into you know, football real soon. Actually, we're coming up on it, so we're going to be talking about divisions in the next few weeks. We'll still comment on baseball and all the other stuff that's going on. But without any further ado, may your sports be with you.